Chewing gum, playing on your phone, talking back to a teacher, these are the kinds of behaviors that are sure to get you suspension in some schools. Well, not anymore in the state of California. Beginning next year, all elementary and middle school students in the state will no longer be able to suspend under something called willful defiance. It's a term that's vague and really hard to define, leaving many educators up to their own interpretations of exactly what it means. And data shows that when that happens, Black and brown students bore the brunt of the discipline. Well, we wanted to see what discipline looks like at a school without the option of suspensions. So we went to one in West LA, a school district that did away with willful defiance 7 years ago. But before we take you there, we're joined by NPR education reporter Anya Kamenetz to explain some of the reasons suspensions are problematic. Thank you for joining us, Anya.
Thanks for having me, Tanya.
So in recent years, the rate of suspension nationwide in schools has gone down. But in 2016, Black students were still more likely to get suspended than their white peers. And you've been reporting on this issue for a long time. In your most recent reporting, you found that overall school discipline in the country has gone down, but there are still these racial gaps. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the racial gaps get really pronounced when you look at certain subgroups, like, for example, girls. Black girls are 6 times more likely to get suspended than their white peers. We also see very big gaps in the preschool level. So about 4,400 students were suspended from preschool in the most recent year, for which there's federal data, and almost half of those were Black.
So it's important to note that we're talking about normal behavior, like chewing gum or disrupting class. But the punishments, according to the data, is really much harder for Black and brown children, correct?
So I think what we're talking about here is really the question of implicit bias. Are Black and white students going to be judged differently for essentially the same behavior? And just as we see in the criminal justice reform movement, there's starting to be research that shows that there is implicit bias in the population against children. So, for example, a study that was published by the American Psychological Association found that undergraduates, young women, mainly white women, judged children over the age of 10, they judge Black children to be significantly less innocent just based on a photograph than white children. So there's this question of, you know, before you even do anything, are you being judged as being less innocent? And a similar study found very similar things for preschool teachers actually looking at Black and white children and making judgments about who was misbehaving.
And the stakes are really higher. So your child trend analysis, NPR's, found that being suspended or kicked out of class for a Black child can impact the trajectory of that child's life. A lot of us have heard of the preschool to prison pipeline, but can you explain the stakes a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when students are suspended from school, that often starts the process of them becoming less connected to school and dropping out. In certain schools, depending on the presence of a school resource officer or police officer, getting in trouble in school can mean getting arrested at that same time. And that's beginning of having, you know, a record that can follow that child literally for the rest of their lives. And getting suspended in school can increase the chances that they're going to drop out then, which impacts their, you know, everything. Their college and their earnings later on.
Mm-hmm. So back in 2014, the U.S. Department of Education issued guidance on how to identify and avoid what they call discriminatory discipline. Based on your reporting, what are some of the alternatives to suspension and expulsion?
So the concepts people are talking about usually fall into the categories of restorative justice and positive behavior interventions. And the thing is that they all take a lot of time, energy, and training, and they're difficult to implement, without resources. We still have 14 million high school students in this country attending schools that have a police officer but no school counselor or mental health professional. Mm-hmm. And so while I've seen these approaches become, you know, be very, very successful in schools, it's really a wraparound approach. You know, it's social and emotional skills training, it's mindfulness time, it's coaching one-on-one for teachers, helping them have better classroom habits. It's having a place for the students to go, a quiet space for them to go, rather than, you know, be pushed out of class, but maybe a quiet corner. And so it really takes a lot of resources to do well. And I think that's why we're having this kind of raging debate in this country. You mentioned 2014, obviously, that was during the previous administration, and the mm-hmm. conversation conversation post-Parkland has been much more in the direction of, you know, hardening our schools and making our schools tougher rather than, you know, these kinds of what has been seen as softer approaches.
That's NPR education reporter Anya Kamenetz. Thank you so much for your time, Anya.
Thank you, Tanya.
Okay, back to that school I was telling you about. Norris Deary Elementary in Los Angeles did away with suspension 7 years ago. Only in the most severe cases will a child be sent home for bad behavior. More than 60% of the students at Norris Deary identify as Hispanic. Black Americans make up about 10% of the school's population, and about 29% are English language learners. Principal Sarah Lansover begins our conversation talking about the problem with willful defiance.
How can you suspend a child or give any consequences to a child for willful defiance when you can't even define what it is?
Principal Lansover wrote her PhD dissertation on discipline and found that keeping kids out of school is fundamentally against what school is actually supposed to offer children.
We need to get these kids ready for being grown-ups and ready for life because life is tough, and we need to be able to get them prepared for that lifestyle or for life in general. But I think oftentimes what isn't taken into consideration in the moment is perhaps what that child is going through, that perhaps they've just had a bad morning. They saw their parents fighting in the morning and they're just having a really terrible day. And the last thing on their mind is school. And all of a sudden the teacher's in their face telling them to get to work. And they're wondering if they're going to see their dad when they get home that night because of this big fight. And I think the teacher's goal is to help the student. The teacher's goal is to teach that student. And if the child's not paying attention, the teacher's first instinct is to get that child to pay attention and get him or her doing their work. And so that could be where a lot of the conflict begins. And then that's the problem, is you end up with conflict. And then sometimes it can elevate.
That escalation often results in Black boys disproportionately disciplined. According to the Department of Education, 25% of all students suspended are Black boys. Black girls make up about 14%, even though both only account for about 8% of the public school population.
The key issue is, how are you punishing a child by taking them out of the classroom? You're punishing them. It leads to that school-to-prison pipeline, which hopefully many people who are listening have heard of. It starts with saying, you're a bad kid and you don't deserve to learn. And that's not okay. So we at the school level need to find another way to help the child perhaps learn their lesson, or perhaps help the child to understand what's going on for their own feelings, to give that child a chance to calm down. If they're upset and they're at that level of where a teacher would want to discipline for willful defiance, they're probably not even at a place where they are able to learn. So the key is calming them down.
And calming kids down requires first assessing their needs.
At my school, we're doing something that not a lot of our schools in the district are doing yet, and I'm really proud of what we're doing. We're doing something called mindfulness. And ours is specifically trauma-informed mindfulness. So anytime a child is sent to me here in the office, which is very rare at my school, fortunately, the first thing I have them do is breathe. Let's calm down, and then let's get to the problem. Let's find out what's going on. And my kids here know that I'm here to help them with the problem that they're having, that I'm here to find out what is the problem, how can we solve it, and who might you have harmed in this process? Let's look at that. Let's look at the fact that your actions have harmed someone else. It may not be physical harm. Mm-hmm. It could be emotional harm. But recognizing that as people, our actions have effects on other people.
But all of this, as you heard earlier, is expensive, and schools have been dealing for a long time with shrinking budgets and demands to get as much learning time in the day as possible. What would you say to other educators, though, who are listening to this, who say, this sounds great. I mean, I want to teach my kids. I want them to be happy and healthy. But I've got almost 30 kids in my classroom, and I'm dealing with some troubled kids, and I'm just trying to get through the day. And I just want to have a classroom that's not disruptive. This all sounds rosy, but I don't know the first step to get to what you're talking about.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because as I sit here talking to you, I picture the audio file online and all the comments below, thinking, okay, that principal is not living in reality. This is my reality, but I think it is tough. This is not, I make it sound so like it's so easy. It is not easy. It is not easy, but I think it's a matter of changing the culture, being just something simple. There's research that shows something simple as greeting your child as they walk into that classroom every day, and you being able to monitor how that child is feeling when they get into that class. If you're smiling at a child and they're not smiling back at you, maybe take them aside. Hey, I was noticing you're not looking too good. Everything okay? And those, it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to change overnight.
The state of California will need to invest in teacher training, says Lanceover, and finding alternatives to suspensions.
Nora Sterry, we just have a way about us here, and where we help kids to feel special and important and heard and safe.
Sarah Lasnover, principal at Nora Sterry Elementary School in West LA, thank you so much for this conversation.
You're welcome.
The state of California will implement the no suspension policy for elementary and middle school students beginning next school year. This is Here and Now.